Hello and welcome to Talking Trading. I'm Caroline Stephen. It's great to have you join us. We have a cracker of an episode today with international motivational speaker Paul McGee, or the Sumo Guy. Sumo stands for Shut Up and Move On and is the straight-talking guide to succeeding in life. Paul's personal development education helps inspire positive change and unlock one's full potential. We also have Cafe Conversations with Louise Bedford, Chris Tate and Rick Klink from Open Markets on Rick's mission to lower the costs of brokerage fees. But first up, we have the news for the week ending 3rd of October with trading coach Colin Simpson. Colin Simpson, good morning and welcome.
Morning, Caroline.
How did the US markets close last week?
Well, they had a very topsy-turvy week. The Dow hit a low of around 16,650, but had a massive day Friday and came back up to close somewhere around 17,000. So at one stage it was down 3% for the week, but it closed. It came back up and closed down around 1% for the week.
Topsy-turvy. How did the Australian market look?
Not as bad. I mean, Australian market sort of been in a range rather than a big drop and then a big pickup. It did drop, of course, following the Dow. It closed around 53.20. The low was around 52.30, so a 90-point range there. It actually did close up slightly for the week, very, very slightly, but different to some of the other indices. And the DAX, for argument's sake, it had much less of a recovery than the Dow. So they're all over the place at the moment.
Colin, you're our FX expert. What happened in the FX market last week?
Well, same old, I guess, in terms of the US is US dollars continuing to rise. Therefore, we've got the Aussie US, the Pound US and the Euro US are all falling. Apart from the US dollar, the Aussie dollar has been pretty stable against most other pairs for the last week or so. The New Zealand dollar is going down against most things. Pound going down and the euro probably going down to fairly flat. So not a lot of movement in the euro. But the big mover is the US dollar. Came out of a channel some months ago, the US dollar index, and it just continued to rise.
A good time to be in the FX markets?
Oh, absolutely, yes. The FX markets since the start of September have turned around big time. As we're all aware, from probably February to the end of August, the FX markets were very ordinary. Big turnaround in September, some quite big moves. They've tended to flatten out a bit in the last week. But we've certainly picked up a lot of the losses that we incurred earlier in the year in the FX markets.
What opportunities are you looking at trading this week?
Certainly in the US dollar stuff, there's some good opportunities there for some aggressive pyramiding. The other good opportunities, I guess, are in the metals. Most of the precious metals are tanking, platinum, palladium, silver and gold, less so copper. But the first four that I mentioned, you know, they're all in downtrends. We're short most of them. So there's some good pyramiding opportunities there as they continue to fall. The US dollar pairs, some pyramid opportunities there. And also in the indices, if they do continue to rise, there'll be some opportunities to maybe get in and get to break even before they hit their highs that they established in mid-September.
Advice for traders this week?
Stick to your plan. Don't go nuts. Yeah, there are certainly opportunities out there at the moment, but stick to your plan. And if your plan involves some aggressive pyramiding, have a crack at it. But, stick to your plan. Number one rule.
Colin Simpson, thank you for your time.
Thanks, Caroline.
Most traders act like a little kid in the markets. They don't know that a great trading plan is their secret weapon.
Isn't it time you grew the f*** up? Register on tradinggame.com.au and grab our free trading plan template. It's a sign of being a mature trader.
Paul McGee is one of the UK's leading speakers and coaches on the subject of personal development and motivation. His provocatively titled book Sumo, standing for Shut Up and Move On, became an international bestseller. Paul has spoken in 34 countries. He's delivered over 1,500 presentations on dealing with change, developing a resilient attitude to life and creating possibilities. Topics we all relate to. He joins us today from London to share some of his straight-talking sumo wisdom. Paul McGee, hello and welcome to Talking Trading. How are you?
I'm absolutely great, although as a motivational speaker, you wouldn't expect me to say, well, I'm not so bad under the circumstances. So, yeah, no, but I'm doing really good, Caroline. Thank you.
Paul, let's get straight into it. What was your inspiration for sumo and why do you think it's had such an impact on people?
Okay, I've been mainly running training courses and workshops for several years and then started to do the odd keynote talk. And I developed this whole thing about sumo, shut up, move on. And I was finding there was quite a response to it and it was pretty positive. But I guess the inspiration behind it was I consume and devour lots of self-help books. But I wanted to write something that I guess, yeah, shared some of my successes and what had worked, but also share some of my struggles along the way. I felt it was hugely important to just be really honest with the reader about my own journey. And also I wanted to inject some humour and honesty into what I was writing about. And I felt perhaps the struggles, the humour, the honesty perhaps were a little bit different to a lot of the other sort of like motivational type books that are out there. And that seems to be something which has struck a chord. It became a bestseller in the UK and then it went out into Australia and a few other countries as well. So I think that's probably one of the reasons why it's been successful.
Let's talk about what sumo is and means. Does it really mean I choose in Latin?
It certainly does. Apparently it can mean a number of things in Latin, but one of the things it can mean is I choose. Now, I didn't know that initially when I started writing the book. I mean, for me, it was just a catchphrase to begin with, shut up, move on. But as I started to work with more of my material, I was conscious that my audience were telling me how much that phrase stuck with them and helped them. And then as I developed my material furthermore, I suppose sumo became the overarching umbrella, if you like, to describe a lot of the ideas and insights that I had. But and I wanted to make clear to people that, yeah, sometimes it is just literally a catchphrase, shut up, move on.
So what do you mean by that?
Well, several things, really. I think sometimes we need to shut up our moaning about things that aren't going to change and accept it and deal with it. I think we need to sometimes shut up our excuses and take responsibility. We've got one shot at this life, so let's make the most of it. And also shut up that voice of self-doubt that tells us why we can't do it and just move on with a little bit more self-belief. But the shut up bit can also mean take time out. You know, when you drive, when you get dressed in the morning, we're doing lots of things on autopilot without thinking. And so the shut up bit is saying, come on, let's wake up. Let's get off autopilot. What's working for us and what's not working for us. And then having done that, let's move on and make a difference.
So in your experience, what are the major reasons people get stuck in their emotions?
I think one of the reasons is very simply we want to avoid discomfort. So we get stuck because the action that will move us on will take us out of our comfort zone. Even though people are sometimes not in a great place, that becomes a place they get used to and they become comfortable with. They tend to tolerate that. And I think sometimes you need a bit of courage to go and honesty as well with yourself to say, look, this isn't working. This is not where I want to be in life. I need to make some changes. But making those changes requires courage, but it also requires you maybe doing something that might make you feel uncomfortable. And people don't always like to do that. I think another reason why people get stuck is because they do very much become a hostage, if you like, to their own emotions. And so they're waiting to feel motivated or they're waiting to feel confident. And until they get those feelings, they're not prepared to do something. And I'm saying to people, look, wake up, guys, smell the coffee. Sometimes right feelings follow right actions. So even if you don't feel like doing something, sometimes you just got to shut up, move on and take the action anyway.
Okay, so let's talk about positive thinking. You talk about fruity thinking. What is it and how do we develop it?
So I was working in the States recently, and a concerned delegate took me to one side and said, Paul, I need you to be aware that the term fruity has some sexual connotations over here in the States. And I said, don't worry, it has sexual connotations in the UK as well. And I suppose one of the reasons why I use the term fruity thinking is I want to get people's attention. We hear a lot about the need to be positive, you know, positive thinking. And I think It almost becomes a trite phrase now that people switch off to. But for me, we eat fruit, hopefully, because it's good for the body. But I wanted to focus on the fact that we need to develop some fruitiness or fruitfulness in our thinking as well. And the reason for that is because I think a lot of people struggle with what I call faulty thinking. In other ways, those kind of conversations that we have inside our heads that really don't help us at all.
Tell me more about that, because that's such a big issue for everybody.
I think so. One of the questions I often ask people is, you know, besides God, if you believe in God, who is perhaps the most important person you're ever going to talk to? And ultimately, that most important person you're going to talk to is actually yourself. And I think some of our internal conversations don't work to such an extent that I think what I call faulty thinking can actually increase your anxiety and your stress and can decrease your confidence and your motivation. And so for me, I look at particularly my Sumo book, and when I'm speaking at conferences, I invariably look at four types of faulty thinking. Let me just share a couple with you. One of them is what I call the inner critic. That's the voice inside your head that highlights your weaknesses and undermines your confidence. And I want you to picture for a moment, if you can, if you've got a big red boxing glove on your hand. And what we're very good at doing at times is using that boxing glove to beat ourselves up, to give ourselves a tough time. And what I try and help people to realize is that we need to listen more to what I call our inner coach rather than our inner critic. A second type of faulty thinking is what I call the martyr syndrome. And what I mean by that is people who are going around in life, you know, why me? Why does this always happen to me? And they play what I call the BSE game, blame someone else for everything. And that's all about the need for us sometimes to take some responsibility and some ownership for where we're at in life rather than play the martyr. So there's more than two types of faulty thinking, but the inner critic highlights your weaknesses, undermines your confidence. And the martyr syndrome. And by the way, when you're the martyr, you also tend to wear a T-shirt that has the word victim written all over it.
So how do we get out of this faulty thinking and move into fruity thinking?
That's a great question. And I think one of the things we often hear from motivational speakers is, well, come on, let's be positive. But I think the underlying question we all have is, yes, but how? And I came up with seven questions to help you, Sumo. So if you're faced with a challenge or an issue, rather than say, well, I need to just be positive about this, ask yourself some really great questions. Because when you start asking yourself some good questions, you're going to come up with some really good answers. So let me give you a couple of examples of the kind of questions I've got. And if people want to go to my website, thesumoguy.com, you can actually download these seven questions. But one of them is very simply this. Ask yourself, when you're faced with an issue or a challenge, okay, where is this issue on a scale of 1 to 10, where 10 equals death? People are so skilled at getting things completely out of perspective. They beat themselves up over trivial stuff. They get irritated when they're in the car. They get upset with their colleagues, with their partners. Maybe this is all part of natural life, but hang on a minute. If we're not careful, we're going around in life making everything an 8 or a 9 when actually it's a 1 or a 2. And I actually say to people, you know what? Stress makes you stupid. I mean, drugs and alcohol will do it as well, but stress makes us stupid on our ability to tackle challenges, deal with setbacks, move forward positively can be really hindered when we've got this mindset that everything is a bigger issue than actually it is. So where is this issue on a scale of 1 to 10, where 10 equals death? Another great perspective question is, okay, now how important will this be in 6 months' time? You know, we need to keep sight of the big picture and not get derailed by some of the stuff that happens to us on a day-to-day basis. Another one question would be, okay, is my response appropriate and effective? So before you fire off that email or storm into a meeting or want to chastise your kids about the state of the bedroom, hang on a minute, press pause. Is my response going to be appropriate and is it going to be effective? And I'll just give you a couple more just to think about and focus on. Here's a brilliantly simple question, but I love it anyway. Got an issue, got a challenge, feeling like you're wanting to wear the victim t-shirt, simply ask yourself this. Okay, how can I influence or improve the situation? The reality is your brain helps you find what you're looking for, but you've got to give it some guidance on what to look for. And sometimes we're just, our default mechanism is to focus on the negatives. And when you ask yourself that question, how can I influence or improve the situation? You start to see some possibilities and some positives maybe you hadn't noticed before. And the final one, I know this is not all seven, but I just want to give your listeners a taste of this. Just a great one, just to put everything into perspective. And it's simply, it's the seventh question on my seven questions, help me assume, and it's simply, what can I find that's positive in this situation? And invariably, there is something you can find that's positive. And when you find it, it helps you develop that resilience and that inner resourcefulness to say, okay, I've maybe had a bit of an issue or a challenge here, but I'm fighting back and I'm back in the game and there's plenty to still be thankful and positive about.
Paul McGee, where can listeners go to pick up a copy of your books?
Okay, I know certainly in Australia, Dimmocks sell the book, but you might also find Amazon is a great outlet for you as well to find it. Or if you just want to make contact via my website, thesumoguy.com. And we'll do anything we can to help your listeners get in touch with any resources that they will find will add value to what they're trying to do, both professionally and also personally as well.
Paul McGee, thank you for your time.
Thank you very much.
Louise Bedford and Chris Tate join Rick Klink from the online brokerage firm Open Markets in Cafe Conversations. Rick shares his personal quest to lower the costs of brokerage and pass those savings on to clients.
Louise Bedford here. I've got a cafe conversation segment with, of course, Chris Tate. You've come out on this lovely cold Melbourne morning, haven't you, darling?
I'm back again.
You are back again. And our friend Rick Klink. Now, Rick, we've known you for almost 20 years now, isn't it?
Is it that long?
Oh, my goodness, yes. It just seems like yesterday, doesn't it?
Like yesterday.
Now, Rick, you have got an extensive background with the markets, but what I want to talk to you about for our Talking Trading listeners today is to discuss the rising cost of brokerage. Now, we know that brokerage, since you and I started trading all those years ago, brokerage has come down, but it seems to hit a stalemate. Give us a bit of a perspective about the cost of brokerage and what you're doing to change this model.
No problems. Thanks, Louise. Let's see, back those, 20 years, 15 years? So brokerage, we used to pay over $100 a trade and 100 basis points or 1%. And I think in those days, there was a combination of the high price of brokerage because it was integrated with advice. What we've seen is a huge change recently where the unbundling of brokerage and advice. And so now a lot of people are saying, I'd like the best priced execution and I'll go somewhere else. And so that unbundling has allowed people to go now and push down the cost of trading. And we're free now to take advice and get research wherever we want. And so the unbundling is what's driven the price down of trading.
But you still think brokerage is too high, don't you?
It's still too high. There's examples now where trading in the US is down to $2, $3, $5. So what happens, what we need to do in this country is continue to remove the cost of running a brokerage service, remove the cost and pass those savings on to the client.
I would even go so far to say as this is a personal quest for you. Would you agree, Rick?
I think it is. With my background as a computer science, computer engineer, I've got the right skills, I think, to look at how do we remove IT cost and lower the cost of people. Our job is to automate the entire process of trading, to make sure that we need as few people as possible to put on as many trades as we can to lower the actual cost. So we're a heavy user of cloud computing. We're trying to reduce the cost of our IT, move it on the cloud so we only pay when we need it. So cloud's a great example of how to reduce IT costs.
And from a broker's perspective, Chris, I know that you've had an extensive broking background. You've probably seen quite a few changes. I want you to put on your share traders' hat at the moment. Why is it important for share traders to keep their transaction costs down?
Simply because it's the only fixed cost we have. The more you can drop that fixed cost, the more fat you've got in, your business, if you can drop that down. To be honest, I still don't know why people are paying $29.95 for execution only. I actually like the execution model, because I always thought brokers were being somewhat disingenuous with advice, because I could throw darts at a dartboard just as well as they could, and I could save myself some money doing it.
I think longevity in the market is also important. So with a lot of the brokerage companies that we were just talking about over a cuppa then, it just seems to be such a flash in the pan thing, doesn't it, Rick? Have you noticed that?
Well, yeah, I think it is. It's one of those ones that, as Chris mentioned, that the there is a big change going on in the industry right now, and so there's two layers. There's the full service model and the discount broking, and it's going one of two ways. So, but the discounting generally, the discount brokers are owned or run by a bank, and so from their point of view, it's less interested in the brokerage. It's more in the selling the home loan, the insurance, and so what we're focusing on right now is have a standalone brokerage service. That's all it does. It's about supporting clients and less about wallet share with all the asset. Just be very, very focused on giving a good online trading service, and you go and again get the research, get all of the information from where you need it. But stick to our knitting and just provide a great brokerage service.
That's great. And if people would like to research your brokerage service, what can they do, Rick?
They can come straight to our website, openmarkets.com.au, or give us a call. The details are up on the website.
Lovely. Now, the other thing that I've enjoyed about this morning, Rick, is that we were talking about the importance of community and being able to have support as people are trading. And also, isn't it interesting how few live events there are now? Have you noticed that?
I have, Louise, and that's part of our interest. As Open Markets, our job is to, whilst we're providing the trading, we have a lot of people that call us up and they say, well, that's great, you've got a great trading service, but the downside to our model is we don't give research, we don't really give education. So one of the great things we're trying to do is get the people together in a room and provide very interesting speakers in all aspects, in trading, in tech analysis, and running a self-managed super. So over the next 12 months, you'll see a big rollout of programs for people to come along and learn about those aspects, and particularly all the networking that comes from getting people together in a room. So we've just finished a Melbourne run and a Sydney run, and we're doing one around the country, and then we'll start up again, and hopefully with one together very shortly, and getting you to come speak to a lot of the Open Markets clients and present a lot of the interesting information around what they should be looking out for with their trading and strategies. And I think there's huge opportunities. There's a big demand for knowledge. That's in the last 4 or 5 years, there's really nobody coming out and providing a networking forum. It's great, you can do it online and many, many websites, but it's time that people can get together again with great ideas and share a cup of coffee or get together and share ideas and network.
I'm loving that. It's really highlighting the importance of education in the markets as well, because an educated client would be, of course, your best brokerage client, wouldn't they?
Totally agree. As Chris mentioned before, our model's very thin. We're at $13.95 a trade or 7 basis points, and so we need to do a lot of trading. And so from our point, what we want is people to stay with us and to continue trading with us and bring their friends in terms of our model and the pricing structure. As Chris mentioned, cost is everything. If you have a small portfolio, you don't want to erode it with expensive trading costs. So the best thing, again, the more the networking, getting people together and passing on those savings, everybody wins.
Love it. Thank you so much for your time, Rick, and Chris, as always.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Following on from their cafe conversation, Rick, Chris and Louise have planned a free evening in Melbourne. Keynote speaker Chris Tate presents Complexity is Rubbish and is probably making you poor. Come and enjoy complimentary drinks and canapés and strengthen your support network and make new trading friends. Make sure you book in immediately though, it is for one night only. Go to this week's episode at talkingtrading.com.au, click on the link and register for this one-off event. That's talkingtrading.com.au. And that's all we have for you today. I'd like to thank our contributors, Paul McGee, Rick Klink, Louise Bedford and Chris Tate. Keep the motivation kicking and stay tuned next week for our tax man and friendly accountant, TV star Jason Cunningham, on Self-Imposed Accountability. I'm Caroline Stephen, and on behalf of the team here, thanks for your company. See you next time.
Talking Trading is sponsored by TradingGame.com.au and The Mentor Program. The Mentor program has been running continuously since the year 2000 and is a 6-month repeat for free course run by Chris Tate and Louise Bedford. Make sure you're registered on tradinggame.com.au to hear more.
The views represented on Talking Trading are general in nature and do not take into account your objectives, financial situation, or needs. Before acting on any information, consider its appropriateness in regard to your own situation.